issues between Jönsson Eibschitz and Bianca Vemden. And of course, just to make Hakdomi, you have to understand each one was a godel in his own right. Each one was recognized. It would not be an exaggeration. Well, Jönsson Eibschitz really was the preeminent godel ador of his time. Probably the greatest Rosh Yeshiva of all time. He had 20,000 Talmidim. You can imagine 20,000 Talmidim in Kufa of that period of time to be able to have such an attraction that speaks for itself. But besides all the other different things that Gedolei Yisrael have said about Rabbi Yonison Eibschitz, he's called in Olam HaChassidus, he's called the Rebbe Rabbi Yonison. Not Stam Rabbi Yonison Eibschitz, it's called the Rebbe Rabbi Yonison. Because in addition to his godless benigle, he was a tremendous, tremendous also Goyen Benister, and Chochmas HaKabbalah, and all these inyonim. Because he was a Boki and a Mushlim in all Chochmas, he was a godel ador in every area as well. Sai in Teiris HaNigle, and Sai in Teiris HaNister. The problem that started out, and Rabbi Yankiv Emden, by the same token, was Odom Godel Me'oid. Even though officially he was not a Rav in a capacity, he's called Rabbi Yankiv Emden because for a short while he was a Rav in Emden. But he always claimed he didn't want to be a Rav. And as the Chidor brings down in Shema Gedoyle, that Rabbi Yankiv Emden, you know, B'derech B'tichas, it would say, Shloisani Oved, Shloisani Aved, Av Bezden. After Bruch, he's not a Rav. He lived here in Hamburg, and he was born in Altona. As a matter of fact, 1698. There's a day, 1697, 1698. It's not very clear. Sometimes a little mysterious in his writing a little bit. In Megillah Sefer, it comes out sometimes where it could be one or the other. His father, the Chacham Tzvi, of course, from the Gedoy Lahador, and as we mentioned yesterday, I believe, on the bus, that the Divrei Chaim, the Sanz Aruf, that considered it a chashivas to put on his matzeva, the Divrei Chaim, that they are Megeza, that they are descendants of the Chacham Tzvi. He mentioned Mashal also, godless of the Chacham Tzvi. Chacham Tzvi was a son-in-law, was an item here of Zalman Mirils, who was a Rav here in Hamburg, who was an Odom Godel himself. And the Chacham Tzvi here also functioned as a Rav here in Hamburg. As a matter of fact, there was a shared Rabbonus, if you will, also was shared with someone, Rav Moshe Rattenberg, Maharam Rattenberg. And there was due to a Gevissa Machloikis that the Chacham Tzvi left. The Shalva Machloikis, which is suggested, it was, we mentioned on the bus, Lagabe something else. Remember the Machloikis, the Chuvas Chacham Tzvi, regarding the oif, the chicken, that was found, right, to be missing a leif, to be missing a heart. And the Shalva was, you have such a vital organ missing, how could the oif be kosher? And the Chacham Tzvi tying it, he understands his adrab, just because, being that an animal, any creature, cannot live without a heart, that behechrich means that there had to be. It's a given alev, except it got lost. Thought in the tshuva, he mentioned there was a cat, as I mentioned, running around the house. The cats had gechapt, the sigindiman. So there was. Yet Rabbi Yonison Eibschitz was not of that opinion. As a matter of fact, he said he spoke to the medical professionals, they said, in the University of Halle, he said. And they said that, yes, it's like true that no creature can live without a heart, but Yitochim, they said, maybe today probably mistake the medical opinion would change, but at that time they said that it's shy sometimes that a different organ can substitute and take over some of the functions of the heart, and yet halachically it's not a leif. And every Yonis Taibis in crazy place, you'll see Yonis Taibis in passing that strafe. And this machloik is, by the way, Chacham Tzvi was also Moshe Rottenberg, who was here in Hamburg, took the other opinion, took the opposite opinion. I did not agree with the Chacham Tzvi. And it is said that it became such a heated situation because there were sides being taken to this side and to this side. Interesting, a matter of halacha all of a sudden became such a big thing that the Chacham Tzvi, to share Rabbonis, he said, was somebody which came out to be such a rival in this issue, even though it's important because of Bank of Emden. Again, you know, many things are very hard to know, objective writing. He doesn't mention that Nakuda. He mentioned that the Nakuda was, which is hard to say, but Rabbi Yankiv Emden writes it this way, that the reason the Chacham Tzvi did not want to share the Rabbonus with Rav Moshe Rottenberg and he left, he says it's because there was some financial impropriety with Rav Moshe Rottenberg, Epis Nisht Kosher, with his handling with money, and Mameli feels it's not, he doesn't want to share a Rabbonus with someone who has this type of a fleck on his reputation. This is what Bianca Venn brings. But other historians tie that Bianca Venn also, you know, is on the side of his father. And so this is the way Abkapon he presented it. Shabtzai Tzvi, of course, who is the Shoirish of the whole controversy that started with Bianca Venn and against the Eibeschitz. Shabtzai Tzvi himself was, of course, the false Mashiach. Certainly turned out to be that way. We had to realize he had tremendous success. Tremendous success. Because many, many Gedoyli Yisrael were taken in. Many Gedoyli, we're not talking about Stam Amcha, people not knowledgeable. People, Gedoyli Yisrael, who had knowledge in Torah, had knowledge in Kabbalah, and because Shabtzai Tzvi was somebody who had tremendous koiches, and he promoted himself as a Mashiach, which turned out to be, of course, a Mashiach Sheker. So in the year in 1666, Shabtzai Tzvi converts to Islam. He converts to Islam. And with that, actually, the legitimate career of Shabtzai Tzvi, the legitimate career basically ended. But it did not end really there. You believe it or not, you have these diehards. You have people that were so connected with Shabtzai Tzvi that they refused, no matter what happens, they pushed, refused to really see it in the way that it is. And then they came with some, again, Kabbalistic explanations. That Bemis is, he still is the great man that he was. Aye, how's it shach to convert? That's a kishmat to Islam. To retain it. Because Bemis is being that he is such an Odom Godel, and he's supposed to be Mashiach, the koich of Mashiach is, the tachlis of Mashiach is, to be able to be malakit and to redeem all the nitzitzus kedoshis. All the holy sparks, right, that are scattered all over the world. Bechlal Dariya Kodesh says, you know, the Chazal say that the Gol Yisrael Beno Amim, right, El Kodesh is Kabul Gerim, nor to Ben, what does it mean Gerim? The Yidden were put into Gol as a Gerim. How many Gerim is Shinsiki Kimin and Klal Yisrael, this Kedai? But the Gerim does not mean Dafke Gerim Zanzach Megayer. Gerim means also, the Nitzitzu Kedusha was Dafim Hovim that needed Tikkun. And that, wherever there's Yidden, all over the world. So may the Mesakin the Alamakoyimus. So how are you Mesakin Kedusha? So sometimes you have to be a tremendous Yerida. You have to go down very, very deep. You have to go down, mamish, deep into the mud. And may to be able to redeem and to elevate to be Malah LeKedusha. So they wanted to tie paket. Is as Agresa mentioned, she has such a koyach that if it's necessary to convert to Islam, quote, it means that what he's going to the Tzad Hatuma all the way there to be able in any sparks of Kedusha that are remaining, right, in that area, he's to be able to be mala it. So these are all the various different hasberim. And Shabtzai Tzvi dies in 1676, and he was only 50 years old at the time that he dies. So you can imagine the short life that he was, the tremendous influence and the impact that he had. And you had people, by the way, that in even when he was alive, when people still, before he converted, that believed, you had three categories of people who believed in Shabtzai Tzvi. You had people that were closet Shabtzai Tzvinics. In other words, on the outside you could never tell, or they wouldn't admit it. However, inside, they believed in him, and whatever they felt you have to do to practice, to go along with the shita, this is what they did. Sarasheni, you had other people that came out befresia, and we're not ashamed of it, we're not embarrassed of it, and would follow exactly and do whatever was the shittis according to the shittis of Shabtzai Tzvi. So, as you can see, that the impact and the tremendous, you know, damage, you know, that he did had far-reaching ramifications. Now, what we have to point out further on is, interesting thing is, that the people, you know, those that outwardly, they appear to be from Jews, that inside, you know, they basically violated the Torah mitzvahs. Among the things of Shabtzai Tzvi, I don't want to get into the mamshi, I'm not going to the area of the immorality, I don't want to talk about, but they were matar achilas chelev. They were matar achilas chelev. Mamshi, inyonim, chayovi krisis, things that carry with them an isser of koris. As a matter of fact, if you convert the word chorus, it's keser. Keser is one of the highest forms in the Yeser sphere. It's keser, you know, chochma bina, you know, and so far. So keser, so chorus and keser are very, very closely related. Just reinvert the words. So they were matter many isuri krisis, and the eating chalev. And interesting, there is recorded that they used to make a brocha. Interesting, the eating chalev, they made a brocha. And the nusach brocha was, Ashgutzonim ben soysov vitzivonu matir asurin. You make a bracha in the morning, matir asurim, but that doesn't mean that. He used to say,
that the Rabbonim in America in the beginning, the early days, you know, there are doctors that are Reifa Choylim, and then there are Rabbonim that are Matir Asurin. You know, they're Matir Asurin. So this is the bracha in this situation. She saw the size of it, Sivonu. This was Matir Asurin. This was the bracha. And being that they were living in the Yemoisa Mashiach, right, so of course, so the carbonates were bottled, obviously, that he was saying, since it was no longer apply, and carbonates were bottled. So he took many different principles to apply it in a way that it should be in the Mashiach era. So going further now regarding this the Sapshai Tzvi era, so let's begin as follows. Rabbi Yankiv Emden, understood that when it comes to the way it's called Sabbateanism, you know, Shitz of Shabbat, see, there's no such thing as a moderate Sabbatean. In his eyes, of course, you have to be oikrit min ha-shoyrish. There's a radical Sabbatean, a moderate, there's no such thing. If anybody had any shaykhis with being a Shabbat Tzvi follower, you have to be oikrit min ha-shoyrish. And matter of fact, he went all out. And you have to say that Akalponim, in his fight, in his melchom in this area, he paid a dear price for it many, many times, because you can understand the fear opposition people who were against him. First of all, the methods sometimes that he used and the ways that he went, it agitated a lot of people. Not everybody agreed with it. And Lamaisi, he did what he felt this is what he has to do. And this was Rabbi Yankiv Emden. It would not be exaggeration to say that if Lamaisi today, when I say today means and years before, if there's no real... No, certainly no serious movement of real believers of Shabbat Tzvi, probably one of the greatest credit would go to Rabbi Yankiv Emden, because of that starke melchoma against it, was to ensure that this is really eradicated, so there's no serious consideration. There's a group called the Don Meh, you know, which is a stam which basically followed a little bit in that mahalach as well. You have to understand that the 18th century, that the century that Rabbi Yankiv Emden lived, it was an incredible century for Yidden. Why? Because it was a productive century. There were no major persecutions of Jews in the 18th century. There was no Chmelnytsky pogroms. That was a gezer of Tachvatat, 1648, you know, 1649. You didn't have that. For the most part of the 18th century, the emancipation also did not set in yet. So basically, Yidden were kept in tow, as it were. You know, didn't have all that freedom. And the Mamela, as it was, the assimilation was not what Germany turned out to be later. Later on, when the movement, reform movement and so on, made inroads. So, we're going to mention as follows. Just to point out to you, you know, what kind of a century we're talking about between Rabbi Yankiv Emden and, you know, and the Chacham and the Rabbi Yosef Leibschitz. You know, and you can pick at random. I'm going to pick the 12 names, just this at random. You can pick many more. Just got an idea what was taking place, you know, in the 18th century, in the 1700s. Because tell you this, you know, first of all, the Baal Shem Tov lived in Mezribish. The Magid, Reb Dov Ber, right, his successor, the Magid of Mezribish, he lived in the 18th century. The Baal HaTanya lived in the 18th century, founder of the Chabad movement, of course, for the most part, in the 18th century. Then you had, parallel to that, you had, in Vilna, in the 18th century, you had the Vilna Goin. Also in that century. He was born and died in that century. In Prague, right, you had the Neude Behude. All taking place in that century. Rabbi Cheska Landau. You had, furthermore, if you go further and you go on, in Frankfurt at the time, right, you had the Pnei Yeshua, all living in that century. And then Rabbi Pnei Yeshua was mentioned, you know, of course, the recognized God Ador. In Metz at the same time, you had the Shagas Aryeh, reaching the same century. So imagine you had the Shagas Aryeh. In Padua, you had Moshe Chaim Lutzato, you had Ramchal. And in Livorno, you had the Chidor, right? Yosef Chaim Dovid, Chaim Yosef Dovid Azulai. So here you're talking about Gedoyle Yisrael, and you can go on and on, all the other Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, not talking about Rabbi Meilach, Rabbi Zishin, the Chayze, and talk about the Koshin Semagid, and Kondor Mendel Rimmel, and the Oivius. I mean, you go on and on and on. Chaim Kodesh. Not mentioned. Your
Chaim Kodesh was also that time?
Well, Chaim Kodesh was in 1600. So it was earlier. So to give you an idea, it was an incredible century. As a matter of fact, there was a goyim by the name of Rabbi Yehuda Modern, nothing to do with modernity. Yehuda Modern, who was a Rav in Siget, Talmid Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer said, this we quoted, that from the Dor HaMidbar, he said, there was no Dor Deya like the Dor of Rabbi Yonis Naibshitz. It's an amazing thing, he said. To have so many different Gedoyim with so many different, you know, so many different coming, different, you know, Yishroshim and attitudes and Mahalchim, but all, of course, being Gedoyim in their own right, recognized by the world over. And he pointed out that a generation of so many Gedoyim all living at the same time, it would not have been a ribu of Machloikis, Mashiach would have come. So at the same time, precisely because there's so many Gedoyim, such a Dor Deya, there had to be something erupting, there had to be something happening, something radical had to take place. If not, Mashiach would have come already. Okoponim, so yeah, idea what we're talking about. So Klal Yisrael, you know, was blessed with a lot of great Gedol Yisrael. Rebbe Staibishitz was born in Poland in 1690. Rebbe Staibishitz was born in Poland in 1690. Also, he was descendant from a great Rabbonim. He says on the father's side, he was a great grandson of the Megal HaMukis. Megal HaMukis is Kavers in Kruke. Many of you have been there, you know that. Yeah. He was there with one of the great Balam Ukubolam, the Ben Dor of the Bach, the Megal HaMukis. His father also was a Rav and moved to Eibishitz, and that's where the name, by the way, comes, Rabbi Yonis in Eibishitz, because his father was a Rav in Eibishitz, a town in Moravia. He became the Abbezin of Eibishitz. And here Rabbi Yonason, when he was 12 years old, was recognized to be as Ilui. No Chiddush in that, Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz. And was taken to Vienna, and he studied there under Shimshon Wertheimer. Also a very well-known personality. He studied over there by him. And then he was sent also to other yeshivas. For example, he was a Talmud of Remeir Eisenstadt, the Baal Ponim Iris. As a matter of fact, he was raised there also, Kamat like a father, by the Ponim Iris. And I think I mentioned yesterday on the bus also that he considered himself to be a Talmud of the great Goyen Rav Ron Breude, right, who was ultimately Rav in Frankfurt, whose cave is in Frankfurt, but we don't know where it is, as we, many, many Matzevis are not there anymore, and the places are not known. But as I showed you from the Sefer Rabboni Frankfurt, from the Matalevi, he not only records it, but has the Nusach of the Matzeva of Rav Ron Breude, as it was when the Matzeva was still extant, when it was still around. We don't have it, but he had recorded the Nusach Neschoyes of all the Matzevas of the great Rabbonim that were there. And that's what we showed you. Even those Matzevas that we have, which are so rubbed out, we could hardly read it. But once I was able to read it, you know, from the Sefer, you were able to recognize still the Yosius that the Matalevi had recorded. So Rabbi Yonis Eibshitz was a Talmud of Rabbi Yonis Lantzoy for the Mil Tzedokah. And Rabbi Yonis Lantzoy was such an Ilui at a young age, and Rabbi Yehuda was more than spoiled from him. And Rabbi Yonis Lantzoy was a Talmud of Rabbi Avraham Breude. So Rabbi Yonis Eibshitz, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yonis Lantzoy, considered himself proudly to say, I'm also a Talmud of Rabbi Avraham Breude. And he said, all the Gdoili Yisrael, Chachmi Yisrael, are Talmudim of Rabbi Avraham Breude. So Rabbi Yonis Eibshitz, said again, was the Talmud, he says, you know, as he calls himself, of Rabbi Avraham Breude, one way or another. He was the Talmud, as mentioned, from the Ponim Iris. And he marries into a prestigious family in Prague, Rabbi Yonis Eibshitz, in 1710. Okay, his father-in-law was Rabbi Yitzchak Moshe Shapiro. That's also by the Einik of Megal HaMukis, Shapiro. That's from his wife's side. So his father-in-law, right, his father-in-law was a Rav. And was able to provide for him, so he should be able to sit and learn Torah. In 1713, Rabbi Yonis Eibshitz comes here to Hamburg. In 1713, Rabbi Yonis Eibshitz is married, comes with his wife to Hamburg, and he starts for Koilel in 2 years. 2 years. And something like he returns at the end of 1714 to become the Baal Darshan in Prague at a very young age. Rabbi Yonis Eibshitz was the Reish HaDarshonim. And of course, you take a look at the Sefer Yaar HaZdavash, you certainly can see his koyach in Drush, even though, in Yaar HaZdavash, there's very little about what he darshaned in Prague. In Yaar HaZdavash, mostly what he darshaned in Metz. Eibshitz was the Rav in Metz, but Eibshitz was the Rosh HaDarshan, he was the major darshan, he was in Prague, that was in the year 1714, he remained for many years. He would never become the chief rabbi of Prague. He was the darshan of Prague, and when the Rav died, right, whose name was Reb David Oppenheim, Mechaber the Sefer Nishal David, Rav Oppenheim, Rabbi Yonason became the Rosh Bezen, not the Av Bezen. Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz became, so at most in Prague, as far as Prague is concerned, he was the hired to be the Darshan or the Magid, he was the Darshan, and then he becomes Dr. the Rosh Bezen, But Lamaise, he functioned as if he were the Abbezin. For all intents and purposes, even if he didn't have the official title of Abbezin, the Bianchen Eibschitz functioned as if he would have been the Abbezin for many years, until 1742, that's what we're talking about, until he's asked, right, he was called to come to Metz. Metz was, you can say, was one of the most prestigious rabbinical communities in the 18th century, and he becomes the chief rabbi of Metz, succeeding the Pnei Yeshua. Pnei Yeshua was Rav of Metz before Frankfurt. So he succeeds the Pnei Yeshua, who leaves Metz, he goes to Pnei Yeshua, he didn't go straight to Frankfurt. From Metz, he goes to Berlin. Pnei Yeshua from Metz, he goes to Berlin. Ultimately, Pnei Yeshua ended up in Frankfurt. And the Yitzchak succeeded him over there. He was Rosh Yeshiva, right? And from Bar Darshan, he becomes, as we see, that what he becomes, and he has his great yeshiva, and as we mentioned, that it was known that he had 20,000 talmidim. So you can see the tremendous influence of Rabbi Yemi Saifshitz, and recognized as really as the God Ador, there was no question about it. Many famous rabbonim and so on and so forth, that you don't even know about, which was also in the 18th century. But Rabbi Yemi Saifshitz, of course, this is as we know. Just want to mention also that this is on this side. Now, when you talk about Rabbi Yankee Vemden was born in Altona, which is today part of Hamburg, and then it was a separate town just outside of Hamburg, Germany, and it belonged to the Kingdom of Denmark. So he was born, as he mentioned, 1698, 1697, and he was 7 years younger than Rabbi Yitzchak Eibschitz, age-wise. Rabbi Yankee Vemden was 7 years younger than Rabbi Yitzchak Eibschitz. He was the oldest son of the Chacham Tzvi, Rutzi Ashkenazi. And he also comes from great Rabbonim, and so far, also an uncle of the Shar Ephraim, famous Shal Teshuvah Shar Ephraim, Pesachei Teshuvah brings them down quite a few times, in Yerideya, and so on. And Rabbi Yankee Vemden's father, the Chacham Tzvi, we mentioned, was Rav in Hamburg, and so on. And he, Rabbi Yankee Vemden, essentially was a Balbos. Basically, that he was a Balbos. Yeah, for a short while, 3 years, by the way, he was a Rav in Emden. For a short while, he was a Rav in Emden, and near the border of Holland. That's what it's about. Small town, near the border of Holland. That's where Emden is. And he was a Rav there. And he himself admitted it. He said he was not made out to be a Rav. By his own admission, he was not made out to be a Rav. He retired from the rabbinate, and he went into business. Yankee Vemden basically made a living from business investments. Not very much Sliach, but this is what he did. This was his thing. He used to travel also. He used to travel many times for the sake of business, Rabbi Yankee Vemden. It's a big chiddush. He was able to write so much and where he had time to learn. I mean, to have that tremendous hekev that he did. The fact that he was so much involved in his life. So he was a balbos, simply a citizen. He lives in Altona, and Rabbi Yonis Naipshis, as he realizes, the Abbezin. So here you have Rabbi Yankee Vemden, Fontaine Supreme Zapush the Balbus, and Rabbi Yonis Naipshis is the Abbezin. 1715. Okay, so Rabbi Yankee Vemden marries a woman, as he himself tells us, a woman who his father selected to be his wife. Interesting. His father selected that woman to be his wife. Rabbi Yankee Vemden was not so impressed with his wife. He writes everything very bold and very brutally honest. He was not so impressed with his wife. And indeed, the fact that despite the fact that he idolized his father, and that's why he did the shidduch, despite the fact that he idolized his father and he did the shidduch, but he held his father accountable for having selected this woman as his wife. And he was quite bitter about it. And Amaisa, he was 17 years old when he married. He was 17 years old, and he would move to Moravia for a while. His father died the same year that he married. Eventually comes to Emden, we said. He was the Rav there in 1733. He comes back to Altona. So in 1733, Bianca Emden is here, and he's in Altona, where he remains, by the way, until he's nifter in 1776. You know that year, 1776 in America, what that means? All right? So until 1776, that's Rabbi Yankee Vemden is nifter. Again, he was one of the great goyim of the 18th century, and a lot of prolific works. The Rabbi Yankee Vemden Siddur, somebody mentioned over here, but Rabbi Yankee Vemden Siddur is not stam a Siddur. It's something that's koilel everything and anything that you want to know in order to be a Yid and to be able to fear Zavi Yid. It's not just the Siddur, of course, he was very, very makpid, Rabbi Yankov Emden, you know, in the vocalization, the violation, exactly the nekudas, how words should be pronounced. He was very makpid. A kumet shouldn't be in the place of a pasach, and a tzeira should be in the right place, and so on and so forth. Very makpid. By the way, Rabbi Moshe Bik was an einik of Rabbi Yankov Emden. You know, he's very upset. You know what he's upset about? Because when they reprinted, there's many different editions, they reprinted, they still Rabbi Yankov Emden reprinted Nusach Sfar, in Ashkenaz. And Yankov Emden, one of the main things where he wrote that Siddur is because this is the Seder HaTfilah. This is the way it's supposed to be. And don't do it any other way. Because after putting so much koyach, putting in so much yegiah, so now somebody goes and prints his Siddur. You know, and prints it in Nusach Sfar, which was not his Nusach altogether. So you took his Siddur. But anyway, so you have all the Menhagim, and you have all of the things, and his opinions in every area, what he is supposed to do before he davens, what he's supposed to do after he davens, the Menhagim is supposed to be on Shabbos, and then in Yontif, and so on, Tisha B'Av, everything, because he was a tremendous poisik, you know, wrote the Sefer Morik Tzir, going through Shulchan Aruch, you know, and on the tour, goes through every simon, and he gives you his opinions, you know, and anything and everything. And he didn't care what anybody else said. He wasn't interested in what anybody else said. If he felt this is the way it is, there would be no loy seguru mipneish, and he would do and express his opinion and vocalize his opinion. So, Rabbi Yankov Emden, by the way, I want to mention that the Chassam Sofer, the Chuvas Chassam Sofer, that in one of the places where he mentions Rabbi Yankov Emden, he says, Dover Godel Dibur Hanovi, which, to my knowledge, I don't think that there's any place else you find that type of a lotion from the Chassam Sofer, Dover Godel Dibur Hanovi. Of course, it didn't mean Novi Mamish, but the Kupon, even the fact to use that type of a lotion, I mean, it tells you at least how revered Rabbi Yankov Emden was by the Chassam Sofer. Also wrote the Perush HaMishnayis Lechem Shemayim, which is also interesting. He talks about a lot of personal things, which we're not going to get into over there. And the Sefer Morik Tzio, as I mentioned, the Shalz Tshuva, the Shelos Yaivitz, that we know about, and so on. Rabbi Yankov Emden marries three times. Yankov Emden marries three times, his first two wives died, and he buries 11 children in his lifetime. I mean, for that alone, it depends on how many stories the person can go through. Besides, if you remember in the Yochid Tzadikim Shurim that we talk about, he says all the depressions, openly he talks about the depressions, and how his father, the Chacham Tzvi, was depressed because of various situations, not mentioning now the details, but what it was. But all the different sorrows that they had in his life, they were always wandering from place to place. But he buried 11 children in his lifetime. And he was blind in his old age. He was blind in his old age. And he suffered. And he was basically, you can say he was an unhappy person. Because you go through his writings, this was the Sibir for this reason, there was the Sibir for that. There's always a reason, something, things challenging in his life, you know, that caused these situations. And this is in his autobiography where he writes about. He lets you know, by the way, in the Megillah Sefer, he lets you know how he feels about anyone and everyone. Imagine like this. He goes out and tells you how he feels about whoever he mentions, and he tells exactly what his opinions are on that person, including what he feels about his wife, putting his children, any complaints if there was. He writes about that too, and so on and so forth. But he says, basically, he says, what am I? He says, he says, I sit in my house and I learn Torah Yom Havalayla, Rabbi Yankov Emden. So the two people that Rabbi Yisrael were talking about here is, again, just to give a little akdomah, so now you know it's Rabbi Yankov Emden and Yevnison Eibshitz. So we're talking about Rabbi Yankov Emden in Altona, we're talking about now in the year 1750. Okay, we're moving now to 1750. The year is 1750, he lived there for quite a while. There's only one shul in Altona. And again, if you're familiar, and we mentioned a few times, if you're familiar with the Jewish communities in the 18th century, you know that in a typical town there was a shul, and there was a one rav and one community. You couldn't just go ahead, you know, open up another shul, another shtibel. He said, it's not Brooklyn. You can't do that. Can't open up. You had to have a skomet, it had to be recognized by the government, by the Zion Toivah Hoir. You just couldn't. You had the one community, you had one rav, and you had the shul of that community. So here and then, there was a president of Yeshua and so on and so forth. So, and not only that, I have a copy, and I don't have the time to go into that. There was also rules. If you made a bar mitzvah, you made a simcha, you could only, here in Altona, you could only invite a certain amount of people. There was coming up now today with the takonis of simchas, making smaller simchas that you have in New York. This is an old zach. This goes back from here. By the way, I have to have a copy of Tikkunis in Prague, in Frankfurt, in Hamburg. Neu-Yehuda made Tikkunis in his Tikkufe. Mamish strict Tikkunis. What type of matonis can you give in engagements? How many people can you invite for a bris? How many people can you invite for a vachnach? Everything was controlled. And by the way, it says there, and if you broke the Tikkunis, you would be punished with kach v'kach Reichstaler. That was the name of the matbeya. Kach v'kach, you'd be punished. And so on and so forth. So it was not just a tekona and go ahead and do whatever you want. If you broke the tekona, you were punished and you had to pay a knas. You had to pay a penalty. You were penalized for that. So you could see the tight control. It's not like today. Just tight control, a rope of the community, and the community had control of the people. Yaakov Emden had difficulty because you can imagine he didn't quite well get along with other people. He would always see something, if it bothered him, he would be out there very outspoken. It would be very difficult for him to daven with other Jews. Yaakov Emden petitioned the Balabatim of Altona in the 1730s, almost as soon as he moved in, and was granted permission. He had a private minyan. Yaakov Emden here, he had a private minyan, but it had to be a minyan mitzumtzum. You couldn't just invite as many people as you want to daven with you. People had to daven the main shul. However, he was granted permission to have his own private minyan. A minyan of ten yidden were allowed to daven. And Yaakov Emden, by the way, didn't have to walk to the main shul, and the Mele didn't have to listen to the drushes of the rabbi either. So this was Yaakov Emden. Now, in 1750, so again, remember, in 1750, Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz was elected, he said, by acclamation to become the chief rabbi here of Altona and Hamburg, Wandsbek. That was called, you know, Aleph Heivov, Ehu, Altona, right? Altona, Hamburg and Wandsbek. And these are the three towns. And it was a very distinguished Rabbonis over here in Hamburg, because before that was Reb Cheskel Katzenellenbogen, the Knesset Yecheskel. Because Cheskel himself was a great Rav, which we didn't even mention. We said the Rabbonim of the 18th century that we mentioned before, we didn't even mention. Ayin b'mishneh brura in Arachayim, where he brings down the whole Seder of Chiyuvim, you know, in Kaddish, you know, between someone who's in the Shiva, has it in Kedivim, or someone in the Shloshim, right? And you have an Oireach, a guest coming into town, he may be, right? If somebody else is Yud Beis Chodesh, and the guest may be a Shloshim, but he's not a Toshiv in the Kila. The Toshiv in the Kila is a Ben Yud Beis. Usually a Shloshim has it in Kedim over somebody who's only Yud Beis Chodesh, but he's not a... All the different halachas regarding Kadeshim, because today everybody says Kadesh Bebasachas, you know, here, not in the community in Washington Heights. Washington Heights, they get a clap, the Gabbai says Kadesh. You know, one person says Kadesh, the one who's supposed to say Kadesh. So you have to know, so has it in Kedima? Who's supposed to say Kadesh? Right? There's five people who want to say Kadesh. You can just say everybody can say Kadesh whatever you want. The Knesset Yecheskel was the one who basically organized and gave a Seder of, in terms of the Seder of the Kadeshim, and the Mishneh Berurah in the Bir Halacha brings down the Seder of Kadeshim, based upon Kaseh. He was the Rav before Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, right here in Skever Betz Hashem. Hope to see it here as we go. And the Knesset Yecheskel was a great poysik here. He was a Rav in Brisk, quite interesting. He comes from Brisk. He hails from Brisk. He comes from Brisk. He becomes a Rav over here in Germany. And he dies in 1749. Right? It was an election. Interesting. Rabbi Yaakov Emden was a candidate and not elected. Ben was a candidate, not elected. Yonis Eibishitz elected in 1750 as the rabbi here of the three communities. Yonis Eibishitz is 60 years old. Yonis Eibishitz is 60 years old when he comes to Alton with his family, again, one of the greatest gedolim, with the greatest Rosh Yeshivas in the world. Right? So it's a very interesting thing. So you have these two great people living right, one around the corner from the other, but they didn't have much to do with each other. That much to do with each other. He had his own minion, as we said, and his eyes was the chief rabbi. I just want to mention that when he wrote the Siddur, the Yaakov Emden, he did go to take the skoma, you know, from the Knesset Yecheskel. I just tell you something, you just don't have the time for it now, but I have a copy, you know, of Yaakov Emden, that he did not just pick a fight with Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz. He did not get along with the Knesset Yecheskel either. I have about 10, 15 sheets of interesting documentation about put it this way, very, very interesting details, his relationship with the Knesset Yecheskel. I mean, it's incredible, but you're not going to believe that. But it's just interesting thing. Just one of the things is, he goes to the Knesset Yecheskel, asks him for a skoma on the Siddur, Ketzreskin writes a maskoma. This is in the good times. Guess what? He's not happy. He sends it back. He wants a nice raskoma. He wants a nice raskoma. He sent it back. He wants a nice raskoma. Okay, but this is just Mamish touching the surface, his relationship with the Knesset Yecheskel. So we're not going to talk about that. So in any case, there was about 200 families we're talking about at that Kufa. Something about 200 families. And the controversy starts on, as you can say, on a fateful Thursday morning. It was a fateful Thursday morning. The exact date is Lemisporim, was February 4, 1751. Okay? 1751. Yankov Emden announced in the shul in his minyan, in his house, that he had read a Kameya that had been written by the chief rabbi of Yosef Naibshitz. Right, he read it. He says like this. Because I want you to know something, because Yosef Naibshitz, besides being a darshan, a great darshan, besides being a great Rosh Yeshiva, he was internationally known as being, we discussed as being a Baal Shem. Ibn Sainimshid was known, even though it wasn't called Rabbi Yenis and Baal Shem, but he was known to be a Baal Shem, because he was a Baal Shem. Indeed, as we saw Baal Shem Tov, you had Koiches with Shemus HaGadoshim, you know how to be Mishtamish with Shemus HaGadoshim, and so on. To be able to heal people, he would do that. And the particular time here in this area here, in Hamburg and Altona, there was a Magefa, many women died in childbirth. And therefore they came to him that he should write a Kameya as a Zgula. And Bemis, his Kameyas had a Koyach. He wrote those Kameyas, and one of those Kameyas ended up into the hands of Yankov Emden. And Yankov Emden, right, takes a look at it. And Mamish, he says that his eyes, his eyes almost popped out. He says, Rabbi Saibshis on one hand was this great Makubal. He writes his Kameyas, and Rabbi Saibshitz says that, and the Yankov Emden reads the Kameya, and he makes an announcement that the Kameya that he read, he said, written by Rabbi Saibshitz, he says, can only be written by someone who is a believer, he says, in Shabtai Tzvi. Therefore, he accuses Rabbi Saibshitz, the greatest Rosh Yeshiva of the 18th century, of being a secret member of the Sabbatian group. Now, Rabbi Avram Stern, who is the father of the Ritzina Ruf, Rabbi Avram Stern, he was a Ruf in Neuheisel. And he records it, you know, his way. So he records it that says that the bo ish echot b'liyal v'zayif is a kameya. I mean, that was his messiah on it, that the kameya that ended up in the hands of Rabbi Yankov Emden was a gefalsht kameya, was mezuyif. And indeed, it could be that that kameya, in fact, had those remozim that upset very much Rabbi Yankov Emden. And others say it was not mezuyif. However, Rabbi Yankov Emden misread it. In other words, he thought that whatever he sees in that kameya, that signals and that, right, and that tells us that this is in fact what it is. So it turns out, of course, you can imagine what happened at the height of the controversy. You have to realize at the height of the controversy, this was, as we said, this started at 1751. Because this goes many, many years. About in 1756, Yankov Emden publishes a pamphlet in Altona. He had a printing press in his house. And by the way, the Siddur was printed in his own printing press. And the original Siddur is much smaller, by the way, than the Yankov Emden that you see. It's very small. The original Siddur is very small. Not that it has anything less in it, but it's just very small size.
Three volumes.
That small, the original print. You've seen it?
Three volumes, yeah.
Did you see it? Okay. About Koponen. So he had a printing press, and he prints a pamphlet, right? And the saying goes, whenever Yankov Emden was sufficiently angry, a new pamphlet came out. This is the way it went. Listen, when you have a printing press, you know, the you just do whatever you want. That's why it's very dangerous, by the way, to have a printing press. You have to be very careful. Now, you can't trust everyone to have your own printing press to do that. Yeah. So, Lemaise, this started out with a whole series of pamphlets and counter-pamphlets. Went back and forth to the point it really took tremendous, the sides of Machloikis, brothers and sisters took sides. There was fist fights broke out regularly, this in the shul. There are accounts, German newspapers. There are records of German newspapers in the 18th century, right, recording issues that took place here. That took place here because of this Machloikis. As a matter of fact, also, the stock market was closed in Hamburg, Germany, one day. Because the Jews were engaged, right, in fist fights on the floor of the stock market.
Jews were engaged in fist fights on the floor of the stock market. You can imagine what happened, what took place. The stock market was closed. This would involve Kamat all the Rabbanim of the 18th century. It would be those who took Rabbi Yonason's camp. There were those that were on the side of Rabbi Yankiv Emden's camp. You realize they took sides. And the Tzad of Rabbi Yankiv Emden put Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz's followers in Cheret. And the side of Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz's camp put the others in Cheret. It was said, if you lived in that time, you would be in Cheret. Because no matter where you belonged, now you belong, you'd be in Cheret, one way or another. So you can imagine what was taking place in that kufa. No. So at the height of the controversy, as we're saying, we go further. So in 1756, a pamphlet was published, and when we talk to you about it, and there's a pamphlet which is called actually Pesach Enayim. It's a pamphlet which is called Pesach Enayim. It's a particular pamphlet, and there was a devastating. Who is he criticizing? It's a devastating critique Rabbi Yankiv Emden has against the Noidi Buda. Actually, I'm going to see tomorrow. He was very upset at the Noidi Buda. Why? Because the Noidi Buda became an enemy of Rabbi Yankiv Emden because he tried to defend Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz. So if you're a friend of my enemy, right, that makes you my enemy too. So there's a whole pamphlet with a critique against the Noidi Buda. And therefore, It should not come out as a surprise, right, that Rabbi Yankiv Emden accused the Noi Buda of being a Shabtzei Tzvinik as well. Okay, so he's also now being accused of that. And otherwise, why would he defend Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz? And the truth is, and we have a letter, again, I don't know how much time we have, the Noi Buda was trying to make a pshara. That's all, he's trying to calm down the Machlokes. He was trying to make a pshara, being the great tzaddik that he was, and he saw that European Jewry, European Orthodoxy, specifically the rabbinic leadership, was falling apart. The Yehuda said, we have to do something. We have to stem the tide. We have to control this. So the Yehuda never tried to do something, and Yankiv Emden, of course, would not hear of any psharas. And on the contrary, he considered that the Yehuda, if he's defending himself, he must be one of the same kind, one of the same, doing the same thing. So now, Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz, as we said, was married. He had only one wife.
The Noi de Buda is the one who was asking that Yankiv Emden will be near.
True, correct. Yes, right.
Was he on the same day?
Yes, he was the same day, right? Correct. Yes. We'll mention that also. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yankiv Emden, as we mentioned, had a few wives. Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz had one wife. And I'm mentioning it for a reason, as we're going
to
say.
I have to take a picture. I promised someone to take a picture.
Okay, we didn't give you the nusach exactly. Yeah. I have the nusach. It's hard to read. His wife's name was Elkala. Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz's wife's name was Elkala. She was his wife for something like 45 years. For 45 years, she accompanied him to Altona, and she died in 1755. Okay, she died in 1755. She had breast cancer. It was a lengthy battle, and she lost that battle, and so she died. And it was the first yahrzeit, her first barely passed. Her first yahrzeit barely passed when a vicious attack against Rabbi Yonason Eibishitz, her husband, right, pertaining to the nusach of her matzeva, right, the inscription on the tombstone appears in the Sefer Pesach Enayim, appears there, published by Rabbi Yankiv Emden. And so I'm going to give you, first of all, a copy. Yes, you have a copy. Everybody have a copy. Which copy you have? Let's see. Yeah. Okay, the one I just gave you. Give everybody a copy. Okay, give you the other. No, you go. Good. Hold. I have a copy. Okay, you can see in the bottom, this was published in Alton in 1756. You have over here? Yeah. Wait, you just want to see the message? There's something else. You got something else. No, you got the wrong. You got something else.
Yeah,
no. No, you got. What do you have?
Same one.
No, you have the wrong one. Yeah, let me see. What else you have there? They have, oh, you have this also. Okay. No, actually, what you have. Okay, no, that's fine. Okay, it's fine. Okay, I want you, okay, if you take a look,
Ulaman. Let's see what's over here. We have it. Ulaman. Okay, halfway down the word line, the beginning. It says Ulaman, you see? Ulaman? Ulaman Harois. I want to show you. Got it? Ulaman Harois, you see it? In the middle, starting from the beginning of the line, Ulaman. Huh? Ulaman Harois, I want to show you. This is Bianchi Vend. By the way, you can see the oasis. I mean, it's a primitive oasis. I mean, it goes to many years, I understand. Ulaman Harois, ki efshele lichtiv shum ksive. Bianchi Vend says, I want to show you that Bianchi Sashin cannot write anything. Mibli, he says, Eze remes, he says, min haminis hamishuketsis. He says, I want to show you that it's nothing can come out of his pen. He has to mix up Setsvian everywhere. Bianchi Vend twice to make the point. I want to show you that he efshele lichtiv shum ksive mibli eze remes min haminis hamishuketsis. As he says, Natsik poi, I'm going to show you here, right? Natsik poi, I'm going to show you, he says, eze ksivois, I'm going to show you, he says, eze ksivois, Natsik poi oid, he says, actually. Natsik poi, he says, eze ksivois, I'm going to show you something, sheyotsu mitachas yad hatoyev. What the toyev means? Toyeva, but he's causing him a toyev, yeah? It's a toyev. Hanal. So look, okay, Biyoim, yeah? Biyoim, he says, Oy Tamus, yeah? Yud Zayin Tamus. Says, Chosam, he says, Al Smiches, as we'll see, you'll see, Biyoim Toyev, Tamus, you'll see, Elo HaCharuzim, Shehitzig Al Matzeves Ishtoy, Matzeves Oven, not with the base. Matzeves Oven, what oven means? Oven, right? Huh? Okay, so first I want to show you, look on the left side. This is a tchina that Rabbi Yoim Sinaibshitz wrote, a historical thing, when the queen was pregnant. So he wrote a tchina, a tefillah, sort of like a mishaberech, that she should overcome Bisholim. Prophet Malchus. Rabbi Sinaibshitz wrote a tchina. And, Rabbi Yanki Vendin finds in that tchina a remes to Shabbat Tzvi. Let's take a look at it first a little bit. You'll see quite innocent as we go along. Okay, Ono Hashem, got it? Ono Hashem, Adoinim, Melech Melochin, Shema no koil, Shavas Amcho, Hanoisim Lcho, Rino Tfilo, right? Tachnun, or what is it? It says, Es Beis Adineinu HaMelech HaGod LaChosit Friedrich, him at the king. Melech Denmark, say Denmark, see? Melech Denmark, Yorim Hoidoi. V'cholashu b'shmoi Yikro. Zois Hagviro, Hamalko, Hachasuda, Juliana, you see? Juliana. Lim Shecholea Chutchel Chesed V'rachimim, right? Lasbia Betoiv Edyo, V'litino Amitz Koyach, Uleherioino, right? Her pregnancy, Labal Yikro, Lo Shum Nezek, V'tzar V'yogim, V'tachalif Koyach, Tala Ever Kanishorim, she should have Koyach. Vimelu Yomel Oledes, right? She should have a full birth, right? It should be a full-term baby. The Toivu Benimus Beli Koishel, the Toser Kol Machlo Mikirbo. Seems innocent, right? So far, because she Giu Yemei, but it comes the time of the Kuda, you know, with the Oledes. Pekel Moleh, right? Tzirovach and the Chevle Ledo. Take it away. The Teilet Zera Anoshim Mebrias Toiv, the Chaim Toiv Maruchim Visholim Vikuyim Bo Mashikosu Beterem, right? Beterem. Yodo, right, the term Yovoi, right, is Vimlitos, but a lot, there's a few places also, there's Toys of Fus over here also. Zerek Hayom of Leia, he said there should not be any Kruz Vitzvacha Bemachnoisom, Vitzvacha, yeah, Mechoisa Kim Sosom, and Simcha, the name of Melva Malka, Mavasetoiv, Mashmia Sholom, Lechol Zaroi, Lechol Sorov, Hoim de Malapkudim. Vetia, right, Hamishra Al Shichman. See, it is the test. Looks like a test. It's a mem. This printing press. This many times the test is really a mem. It's not a test. It just looks like a test. The Tia Hamishra Al Shichman Lo Oilam will be a mem. See again the word be a mem. It's again it's a mem. What are you saying? Terachim Tzion, right? And the Rav Yeledes Yagdov Yeshuv Elirois Be Moroim Tzion. Rosh Tevis. I put those words on the bottom. Rosh Tevis Tzvi. See that? In other words, Leroy's be, the base of Bemoroim, the Tzadik, and I guess he put the Yud of Tzion, because this was printed in larger letters of in Rabbi Yanki Vendin. The base and the Tzion he enlarged. By base and the Tzion, this is Oysi Tzvi, the Yud which is next to the Tzadik also. So the Ketrofne Psarem, he says, Tzvi, Shem Tzvi. Okay. But that's not even the purpose. I want to show you this. I want you to show the matzeva, elkless matzeva on the right side. This the matzeva. This nusach matzeva. Okay, now if you look at the matzeva, right? Look at the matzeva. You see that there are letters. You know the letters right on the right side in large print. If you notice. And there are letters, block letters, on the left side in large print. Now, the opening osius of each line, the first is large print block letters, and also you have it right. You also have it on the left side, also, right? Right. So Rabbi Yankov Emden was tiny. If you look at that matzeva, he says, if you look at that matzeva, so you're going to look at the left side. If you look at the left side, you see there's a shein enlarged. Underneath is a beis enlarged. Then you have a sof, which is enlarged, and then there's a yud. Isn't that Shabsai? Right? And after that's a tzaddik. Shabsai, right? So he says, Rabbi Yankov said very clearly, he said, look, he says, all you have to do, and we're going to read the matzeva soon. He says, all you have to do, he says, look at the matzeva, he says, and there it is. He says, you can't miss it. He says, Shabsai tzvi. Very clearly, you have Shabsai and tzaddik following after that. So even on his wife's matzeva, says Rabbi Yankov. His wife's matzeva, he had no other business, nothing in mind, but to make it out, it should work out, as you see, Shabsai Tzvi over there. His point was, because just, and his point was, Rabbi Yankov Emden, that you have to read it to make up. You have to combine the letters, because on the right side, we also have block letters, which they combine to make Elkala. So in the same way that the enlarged letters are to be combined, so the large letters on the left also, the intention is to be combined, and on the left side is Shabbos Tzvi. Because if you read it on the right side, look on the right side, what you have is the ayin from a teres resh, you see? Starting from the second line. You see the ayin, and you have the lamed, ayin lamed, then you have the kuf, right? You have your kuf, and you have the lamed, right? And then you have, followed by a yud, it's rubbed out, el keli, you see? Ayin, Lamed, Kuf, Lamed, which is enlarged, and then there's supposed to be a Yud. It's rubbed out, as you can see. Okay, so this is Elkli. So just like on the right side, the block letters spell, right? All the letters spell to make up the name. So the same thing, the block letters on the left side also, right, are intended to spell out the name Shabsai Tzvi. So here he says, because that's very common to write an acrostic, you know, to write an acrostic where you combine letters from each line or each posik to make up a name. And now you have the same acrostic again now on the left side. So you have the same acrostic on the left side. Now, by the way, the Pesach Anayim was published in 1756 in Altona. This is from the Sefer Pesach Anayim. So the Pesach Anayim, Pesach Anayim was published in Altona in 1756. It was distributed to all members of the community. It was sent all over the world. He sends this all over the world. Yonis Eibschitz is living in Altona. He's the chief rabbi. It was an astonishing claim. Rabbi Yankov Emden was saying that the chief rabbi's heresy was engraved on the tombstone for everybody to see. Right? So if you had any doubts, all you have to do is walk into the cemetery here. If you had any doubts, all you have to do is walk into the cemetery, he said, and take a look for yourself. So what we find over here is a very, very interesting thing. So clearly we see that you have the enlarged letters on the right side, you have the enlarged letters on the left side. Now, I want you to know that the Nusach of the Matzeva exactly, which is, by the way, like you have it here, there's a Rav here in Hamburg, name is Rav Dukas. Rav Dukas wrote a Sefer also with recording, similar to what the Matalevi did in Frankfurt, recording the Nuschois of the Matzevas. So you have from Rav Dukas, was a Rav here in Hamburg, 1903. Rav Dukas wrote a Sefer, a history of the rabbis of Altona. Also, it includes portraits of the Rabbonim, and so on and so forth, and includes also the inscriptions on the tombstones. So we have also the Nusach, what he already recorded in 1903, and as you're going to be able to read it clearer, because this is very hard to read it, as you see from here, but once you have it elsewhere, you'll be able then to look in and be able to read it here also, in a matter of fact. So okay, so now we have here a very serious situation, and it's an incredible thing. It's an incredible thing. I mean, here it is. It's in black and white, right? It's on a tombstone. It's on a tombstone. It's on a matzeva, and here you see that oises are enlarged, and it doesn't take to be much of a genius, right, to make out to see the spelling of what it is, right? Of what it is. So there's a word, some years ago, Shnei Lyman said there was once a philosophical discussion as to how many teeth a horse has. How many teeth a horse has. So you had great philosophers, you know. And one came, Brother Rias, from here, he said that a horse has so many teeth. And another intelligent Chocham, Brother Rias. Then somebody said, what's the big deal? Let's bring the horse and count his teeth. So the idea is, let's take a look at the Matzeva and then see exactly, you know, what's doing with the Matzeva, and be able to investigate, in fact, what it is. So the truth is, if you go in Bez Hashem, now you're going to look at it in different way, with different eyes. If you go down to look at the Matzeva, and sometimes throughout the years also be rubbed, moss, you know, is growing on top of these Matzevas. And as you begin, in fact, to rub out, you will find, first of all, on the right side, as we see over here, you have Elkele, the Ayin Lamed. Ayin is enlarged, the Lamed is enlarged, the Kuf is enlarged, the Lamed in the Yud you'll find is enlarged, right? You'll find that, matter of fact. And by the way, this is supposed to be Elkele Zechroina Levrocha. You notice the at the end is a Zion and a Lamed. You see, Zion is Chus. Chus is a Zion. The Chus is supposed to be a big Zion. But he had no reason to enlarge it, Rabbi Yanki, then, because it was just enough for him just to show the contrast between the two sides. He didn't go all the way down. But the Zion also is supposed to be enlarged, which is Chus, which is Zion. Then you also have the last, which is Litzroyer. It's not. It's again, as you say, the Rabbi Yanki, then, is the printing is not good. They were Litzroyer Chaim. Litzroyer Chaim, the Lamed, at the end, is a Lamed. So it's Elke Lazal. So in fact, you will find on the right side, in fact, that you're going to find Elke Lazal. You're going to find that, right? And then, by the way, what this is supposed to be, by the way, you know what this is supposed to be? Elke Zechoyin Levracha. The Shin of Shira. You see the word on top? That's the Shin. What you have here is you have the Shin of Shira. See on the top line? That's supposed to make up the Shapsa Tzvi, right? That's the first, that's the Shein of Shapsa. The Shein of Shira, Rav Yankov said, right, was made large deliberately by Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, right? The Shein of Shira was made large deliberately by Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. But what he didn't tell us was that the Yud Reish Hei is also enlarged. Rav Yankov did not tell us that the Yud Reish Hei is also enlarged. In other words, the impression that you have here, looking at the Matzeh, the copy that you have in front of you, the word Shira, he enlarged Bedafke the Shin, in order to align it with the base underneath and the Sof underneath, to point out the word Shapse. So first of all, I just want to mention that it's not just the Shin that's enlarged. And the Matzeh itself is Shin Yud Reshe. That's the Shnas, that's the year, 1755. Shira is Shnas Shira. It's the year 1755. Shira is the Gematria of 1755. So all of it was enlarged. So that part didn't tell you, because that was the year. Now, Rav Yankov then also tells you, when you look here again on the sheet that you have, Rav Yankov then tells you that the Shin was on top of the base, right? And they're all in straight lines, Shapsa Tzvi. Guess what? It's not true. It's not aligned in the real Matzeva. The Shin is not on top of the base. All of Shir is enlarged, and the Shin is not on top of the base, right? Spelling Shapsa Tzvi is not true. But matter of fact, there's no even hint to be read that way, because if the Shin is not even there, so you know, so take away the Shin, what it reads? Bas Yitzchok. It's supposed to be Bas Yitzchok. Is it Elkalis' problem that her father's name was Yitzchok? Bas Yitzchok. If you take away the Shin, there's no Shapsa. It's Elkala Bas Yitzchok, Shpiro. And the word Shpiro is on the bottom. Look at the word Shpiro. Look at the last line. Shpiro. It's Bas Yitzchok. Pink Kimtasov. You put a Shin on top, it's Shapsa. You put a Shin on top of Shapsai. It's Bas Yitzchok. It's Elkele Bas Yitzchok. So whose fault is it that the year was Shira and he enlarged the whole Shira and he didn't even align it? Here, Rabbi Isai, give now the copy. This is the way it's really on the Matzeva, as you'll see it. Give the real copy. Here you go.
So then why would Rabbi Yaakov have to do this?
Rabbi Yaakov said the Raya's, anybody can just go to the cemetery and see
Rabbi
Yaakov Emden was
incorrect. Then. I'll try to explain that. I'll try to explain that. Right. It was in, right? Okay. Yeah. First, take a look what it really is. And so, first of all, Yud Tevis, look at the top line. Yeah, you can compare it to what you have, you know, from Rabbi Yankevim. Yud Tevis, because she died on Yud Tevis. Yud Tevis Nehepach Ledvai Ulekino. Right? Shira. Look, you know what? The hay is over the bays. The hay is over the bays. There's not no shaykes with a sheen over the bays to make shabsai. The hay is over the bays. And the whole word is enlarged. If it, you know, if at least the sheen only, even if it's not a... But it's the whole word Shira, which spells 1755. The hay is over the base. But look in Rabbi Yankevim's copy, he put the sheen of Shira over the base to make Shabsai. There's no sheen. It's Bas Yitzchok. Look now. Look at the way we have it on the real on the second copy. Bas Yitzchok and Shpira.
Yeah, nicer.
Isn't it amazing? It's an unbelievable thing. It's an unbelievable thing. So what did Yankevim do? So Yankevim, as he say, he told the truth, but not the whole truth. The word Shir is there. The word Bas, the word Bey, Samach, Yes, Yud, Tzad, it's there. The Sheen of Shira is there, but he didn't tell you what else is there. The Yud Resh Hey is there, and he did not align it correctly. And this is interesting, because you can take a look, we're going to go there and see it, and you're going to see it, they're saying you're going to see it. Now, what you're saying, you know, asking that anybody could go out to the Matzeva, it's a good question, but I believe what Rabbi Yankevim is Chesh, now, the Pashtis, this is opinion, I had it with Shneur Lyman once on this, because Rabbi Yankevim, he said, misrepresented. So again, just in defense of Rabbi Yankevim, he did not want to misrepresent. He wanted you to look at the real Matzeva, but with his eyes. In other words, because if someone is a secret Shabbos Tzvinik, he's not going to openly put Shabbos. Can you imagine what? But if he wants to make a remez of Shabbos Tzvi, he'll go close enough. So you have the Bas Yatz, and you have a Sheen of Shira. Of course, he's not going to put the Sheen on top. But the Sheen is the first letter of Shira. And if he should make just a little bit crooked, just turn the line a little bit this way. Yeah, Shabbos. In other words, what he's trying to say is the Yisabish's Kavona was that. So he printed, Rabbi Yankevim, when he printed his copy, I'd like to, for him, is not to misrepresent to say that this is the way it's on me. He wants it. This is the way you have to look at the Matzeva. Because there is a Sheen of Shira. And I want you to look at the first Sheen, not the Yud Reish Hey. I want to look at the Sheen and then look at the Beis, which is underneath it. And if you look at it that way, because the secret Sabbateans did not come out clearly, they didn't want you to know. So they would do it, Beremiza. And if you do it Beremiza, so this could be interpreted as being looked at it Beremiza. But somebody who's not into this, somebody who's not a fighter of Yankevim, you look at it, you're not going to find it. So Yankevim, I said, no, I didn't think he wanted to be Messiah of the Matzeva. He wanted you to look at it in his eyes. You should read it as the Sheen belonging here. And as the truth of the Sheen is not there. But what he's telling you to, he wants you to look at it that way. That Beis Eibeshitz tried to hide it the best he could. It was ingenious. Bas, it works out good. Bas Yitzchok, yes, you have the Bas, yeah? And the Shira, he can't change the father's name. But he didn't have to make a Gematria Shira. 1755, you can make a lot of different gematrias. No. He chose to use the word Shir because it has a Sheen. Shir starts with a Sheen. And it'll stem with the Bas Yitzchak of Aldik. So you have Shabbosai Tzvi. But upon him, you know, this is if you it's a frame for number to be a mama's story. But clearly you can see that any objective reader who's going to look at this Matzeva certainly is going to accuse the Beis and Eibeshitz of having a Shaykh with Shabbosai Tzvi, as they say. So they say, of all the different areas of Rabbi Yankevim's, you know, accusations against Yud Reishes, most people would say Rabbi Yankevim lost this one. That this one, if you look at the true Nusach of the Matzeva, that this is no means in a way to certainly, which is not going to hold up in court, to prove that Rabbi Yankevim had anything to do with Shabbos Tzvi. One more last thing, because we got to get moving. I'm very, very late. Look, Yud Tevis Nehepach Ledvai Lekina. Could be that Rabbi Yankevim used that as a clue as well. Let's read the translation. Yud Tevis, right, became conformed, transformed, because his wife died, so it became now Yud Tevis Nehepach Ledvayu Lekina. So let me ask you something. What do you mean Nehepach? What is Yud Tevis? You know what Yud Tevis is? Asar B'Tevis. So what do you mean Yud Tevis Nehepach Ledvayu? And what was it till now? But if you're a Shabbos Tzvinik, then the Tanesim of Churban Beis Hamikdash is bottle. But the wife died. Now, Yud Tevis Nehepach Ledvayu Lekina. Yud Tevis Nehepach Ledvayu Lekina. And Shira? What's Shira? Because Yud Tevis Betzim, if it's no longer a real Tainus, then it's really Shira. So I'm just telling you, these are things that you're able to read into every line, to take that, even though he's not mentioning it, Rabbi Yankevim here, but just to show you a little bit how you can go and do some investigative work here and try to find anything. And that's what I was looking with the microscope and to see all this. Good. So now with having this in mind, Rabbi says, I think now we can go a little bit and take a look at this.